Hello, everyone, and welcome to SCI TV. I am Anna Gafanova, a practitioner with the Sports Conflict Institute, and today I'm really excited to be joined by my wonderful colleague, Kate McKinnon. Kate has built a su and supported people-first cultures across so many multiple organizations and brings such a thoughtful HR lens to the world of sports. And Kate, it is so great to have you, and how are you today?
Oh, thank you so much. It's so great to be here. I'm great. I'm great. It's Friday.
Yeah, it's nice and early here. It's 8 a.m. over in the LA side.
Yes, you guys have a bit longer to go today.
Absolutely. Well, to get us started, I'd love for you to tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your journey, especially how you found your way into the intersection of HR, leadership, executive training, and specifically sports.
My story is unconventional. I didn't start in HR. I started in the nonprofit space and then I moved into sales. So I was in sales for a little over 10 years and really found that there was a gap between high-performing producers and their leadership styles. And so I became sort of obsessed with the idea of leadership development and how we're equipping people to be better leaders. And so that led me into a career in HR. And I found that the environments that I loved the most were those with really high performing, competitive individuals, and found my way into the sports world following. I was in healthcare in HR for quite a while, and I left at the height of the pandemic and came across the opportunity at Playfly Sports. And it was my entry into the sports world. And one of the things that I love the most is being able to blend. I'm a huge sports fan, so being able to blend what I personally love with what I love professionally from a HR leadership development training and consulting type of field. And then I went off on my own. It'll be a year next week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so have really built a practice on helping former athletes, veterans, new grads transition into the workforce, and then also doing consulting and coaching around building successful corporate cultures, building and scaling HR functions, and leadership development.
Wow, this sounds so incredible. I'd love to begin with more of a reflection for you. When you think back on all the teams and organizations that you've worked with throughout your career, what's one small moment that made you stop and think, like, wow, this is a very healthy organization?
Oh my gosh. That's a great question. I think, for me, it would have been my time at Playfly, when we were getting started and trying to bring together so many different parts of the business into what then became known as Playfliers, people that worked at Playfly and embodied the culture. And I think for me, it was really seeing their buy-in and their excitement to participate in some of the best places to work surveys and things where the culture really consisted of individuals that owned their culture and owned their experience and were excited to share that with everybody. And so that for me, culture, while yes, it does come from the top, I really do believe that it's built from the bottom and everybody at every level of the organization really has to own their culture and their work product and workspace. And when you see that click and that really start to take shape, it's just so incredibly fulfilling.
And when speaking about culture in an organization, when you try and build that team, how do you identify the people that would be a good fit? Is it diversity? Is it diversity of skill set or whatever it could be? What are some of the tools that managers of teams, both on the sports side and not on the non-sports side, should really think about when it comes to building something that's going to be cohesive and impactful long term?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think first you have to define what success looks like. And so understanding, what a person sort of has as their personality, their work style, their motivations, their drivers, what are the successful individuals that make up your organization? And then it's really understanding how they work, how they collaborate with others, what are the things that drive them, and building almost a profile of people that you can go out and recruit. I think your corporate values and the culture and the things that are important to you as an organization also have to be taken into consideration, making sure that someone aligns with that. And as a culture add, you want different people, you want different experiences and people from different backgrounds so that you have a fully formed, authentic culture that is representative also of the clients and communities that you serve as an organization.
Wow. No, absolutely. I think I was always a huge advocate for, you know, as much diversity as possible. And, you know, I couldn't agree more on what you're saying. And I think that's part of the reason why I went to international schools for my whole life, both on the high school level and college. You know, I wanted to be in an environment where I can learn from as many different nationalities, backgrounds, religions, whatever it may be. And I think it can be so applicable to organizations too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gives you a competitive edge. If you're considering every person's input and you're really listening, it's a competitive edge when you have that wide of a lens to look through as an organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at the sports teams, just from your perspective, I'm really interested to learn. You know, I think a lot of conflict in professional sports teams, it doesn't necessarily come from, you know, any bad intentions. I think the pressure, the miscommunications, and sometimes unclear expectations really drive a wedge between, you know, the organization, the coach, the teammates, whatever it may be. From your experience, what are some of the early warning signs that, you know, tension is brewing inside a team or an organization, and what can leaders or HR managers, you know, do before it turns into a bigger conflict?
Wow. That is such a good question. I think the proactive nature of the question is the key, right? Once you start reacting to things as opposed to proactively getting ahead of things, you're already kind of behind what you should be doing. I think there's a quote, and I'm going to butcher it. I know this is not exactly the right quote, but it's an idea of being aware of when your most passionate people become quiet. And so if you've always had people that are speaking out, that are sharing, that are trying to help mold and shape the organization positively, and they stop doing that proactively, that's a really good telltale sign that there is either a yes culture, a culture where people are only listening to the people that agree with them and they're not listening to people that have differing opinions. And then I think also if you're doing effective stay interviews and exit interviews as an HR team, an HR department, a leader, you can really pull some of those problems out before they become too extreme. Usually, you know, you take everything with a grain of salt when you're listening to exit interviews, but stay interviews can be an incredibly impactful way to say, hey, what's going on? You know, what should we start doing? What should we stop doing? What should we continue doing? And really having that trust where people are giving you honest feedback. I think listening to that proactively will help you get ahead of any conflict. But conflict, you know, the perception of having a conflict-ridden environment is usually silent. It usually comes from silence.
So interesting. Just following up on that, I asked my graduate professor this question a few weeks ago, and I just wanted to ask you too and hear your perspective. So in an organization, some voices get heard a lot more than others, you know, due to not necessarily a hierarchy, but just different, you know, positions within the organizations. And let's say you put everyone in the same room, and how do you make sure that voices get heard equally without one person taking the lead and sort of speaking on behalf of everyone else, and like the quieter folks or the support staff or whatnot get sort of silenced and they feel unheard?
It's a really important thing to bring up, because I think that sometimes people mistake silence for lack of understanding, lack of knowledge, lack of ideas. And everybody has a different way that they express their ideas, their opinions, their thoughts. I think it's on the leader to really make sure that everybody feels seen and heard and that their opinions are valued. And if you have one person that's really taking over, I think it's a coaching problem. I think having conversations with that person and letting them know that, yes, your voice is heard and your you know, input is very important, but we also want to hear from everybody else too. And so I think as a leader, having a clear sort of agenda for a meeting, helping people prepare in advance. Some people don't feel comfortable speaking just out of turn or off the cuff. They feel much better if they're prepared. So giving people a lot of different ways to express their opinions is also important. So either live within a group context, one-on-one, in writing, and everybody's different and everybody comes to the table with different skills.
Yeah. To build further on what you said about, you know, leadership and managers being, you know, the advocate for their teams. I know that as part of your new venture, you do executive coaching, and I would love to learn more about what are some of the tips and tricks you give to someone, you know, that is running an organization or a team.
Yeah, you know, I think it's how well do you know the people that you're working with and who are working for you? I think a lot of leaders feel like they know their team very well, but they don't really ask the deep questions that really allow them to understand why somebody comes to work. What are their motivations? How do they like to receive praise? How do they like to work collaboratively with a team? What's going on in their personal life that might also contribute to what's going on at work? And so I really believe that the best leaders have a natural curiosity for the people that they are around. It doesn't mean that you give people a pass if they're not performing at work, but it just means that you know a little bit more about who you're working with and what drives and motivates them. And so I usually start there, especially if they're struggling with leadership or collaboration in their team. I mean, it starts with psychological safety and feeling as though you can be yourself and you can come to the table with your ideas and they're not going to be shot down. And so really understanding the relationship between the leader and their team along with their colleagues is critical. I also feel very strongly that 360s are a wonderful tool, but I believe in live 360 feedback. So I do actual interviews with people one-on-one to get a very clear understanding of the leader and who we're working to help.
Yeah, I think you've mentioned psychological safety, and it's so crucial. And it's that fine line when you feel so safe with your manager, what, you know, sometimes it could feel as oversharing, but at some point you look at them as their mentor and they're not afraid to share like what's going on in your personal life. And I think if your manager makes you feel like that, it's such a wonderful asset to the team. I was lucky enough to have that during my time at Playfly. And I think that's something that I personally cherished so much and will cherish moving forward. And to back up on that question a little bit, when it comes to remote work, and once in my career, I found myself in a position where my manager was in a different state, and I really struggled to build that, degree of manager versus, you know, just mentorship relationship. How do you have any solutions how to, you know, fix that or help some of the younger folks, or it doesn't matter the younger, you know, like manager and whoever they're supervising, to build that good relationship when you're not together?
It's hard. And it's one of the reasons why I think a lot of companies say, you know, we have to be in the office to do that. I have found that building relationships virtually it's not hard. It just takes intentionality.
Yeah.
You need to be intentional. You need to set time when you can communicate and connect with people that are working in different states, different locations. When you think about, you know, even vendor relationships, a lot of times as an organization, you don't really know the people that are taking care of critical components of your business, but you build a close relationship with them because of mutual respect, connection, making sure that you're having those one-on-one conversations. Yeah. I think the other thing too is trust is paramount in that type of a relationship. And so doing what you say you're going to do is the most important thing when you're working with people virtually. And then having a sense of inclusion, whatever that looks like, whether it's having, you know, a community Zoom meeting where everybody gets together and they play a game or tell personal stories, you know, having that collaborative environment that is intentionally set aside for relationship building, it can really help.
I really enjoy the two truths and a lie game. I think it's such a fun way to try and guess things about a person.
It is. Yep. Yeah.
I love that. So currently, we are in 2026, and I think the world of sports and beyond, we're just in a different, just whole different world, right? We're developing, we're growing AI, a lot of transitions happening. And among those transitions, we see athletes stepping into leadership and management roles across, you know, sports organizations and beyond, you know, starting ventures, et cetera. From your perspective, what strengths do athletes bring into leadership, and, you know, what mindset shifts tend to be the hardest when moving from being a performer to leading people?
Well, great question. I think I'll start with the mindset shift.
Yeah.
One is that when you are an individual performer in whatever capacity, when you are now leading a team, your responsibility is to get work done through others.
Yeah.
And the biggest challenge and mindset shift is that you have a lack of control, especially in the corporate world, around what the people around you are doing, because everybody's motivated by something a little bit different.
Yeah.
Typically, when you're a part of a team, you're all motivated by one goal, which is to win. Yeah. And so when you transfer your skill set from that type of an environment to a corporate environment where everybody's motivated by different things, everybody comes from different circumstances. Some people are motivated by title and you know, forward advancement. Some people are motivated by collaboration and teamwork. It's very hard to sort of lead a team that can sometimes feel like it's going in a lot of different directions. Yeah. I think that athletes in particular, former athletes, bring an incredible skill set to the corporate world. Collaborative, competitive, very feedback driven, very easily receive feedback, make changes, implement the feedback. You know, highly competitive, intrinsically driven. There are just so many incredible, incredible qualities and skills that athletes bring to the corporate world. One of the biggest challenges they have, though, when transitioning to corporate is the perceived lack of structure. The coaching cadence is very different, sometimes non-existent. They're used to getting very consistent feedback on how they're performing. And in the corporate world, that doesn't often happen. You're usually given a goal and you're told to get to that goal. You're not told how to do it every step of the way. And so those types of mindset shifts and coaching topics tend to be the ones that come up the most.
Wow, this is so interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
That's such a cool perspective. Last question. If you could leave some of the leaders, you know, current or emerging, with just one piece of advice for building both high performance and, most importantly, healthy cultures, what would you want them to remember?
Usually my one piece of advice that I leave people with is to give each other grace. I think that's a really important one. But I don't know that that necessarily applies to the question that you're asking.
It does. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think it's listening. Listen to your teams. People typically will speak up when something is really good or really bad. And if you are not actively listening to people, like, put your phone down. Like, when somebody's talking to you, put your phone down, put your phone away, be present, and really pay attention to what's being said. Because I think a lot of leaders miss what's being said multiple times, sometimes the same way, sometimes in different ways. And sometimes if you just listen, you're actually, the solution and the problem are like right in front of you.
Wow. Kate, thank you so much for sharing your time and insights with us today. This has been incredible. I mean, your perspective on people, the leadership, the culture, and just everything was so valuable. And we really appreciate you being a part of SCI TV. And thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's always nice to see you.
Absolutely, Kate. Same here. Thank you.